You are listening to Radio RNN. My name is Raylan Allen. I'm the publisher of RumorMillNews.com. You can always go over to RumorMillNews and find out more information by using many of our search engines. And you can find out more information about the guests that we have here on Rumor Mill News Radio. Our guest today is John DiNardo. He's an old friend of ours. He's a physicist, an engineer, a teacher, and he has been on the cutting edge of worldwide conspiracy for years. I think that he has studied everything. Today we're going to be discussing Planet X, Apocalypse 2012, and I have no idea what else. Hello, John.
Hello, Ray Allen. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, well, you are always a very welcome guest here on Rumor Mill News Radio. John, when we spoke earlier, I told you that someone else has now started talking about the giant tsunami that is going to be hitting the East Coast when half of the mountain from the Canary Island volcano falls into the ocean. And so, I mean, you've been talking about this for, what, 5-10 years now?
Yeah, something like about four or five years now when I first found out about it. Actually, one of the greatest sources of information on this has been the BBC, the British Broadcasting Company, with their television presentation titled Mega Tsunami, which this presentation was also played many times by the Discovery Channel. And I think they're doing it because they're trying to warn people in a way that would be, you know, non-confusing or would not cause panic among
right.
the people. But with the information that I got from there, I tried to memorize most of it, and it was so thorough. I'll try to just go through it real quickly. This mountain, this huge volcanic mountain, is shaped sort of like a long tent.
Let me just say, if anyone has Google Earth on your computer, all you have to do is Google the Canary Islands, and when you get down close to it, you don't even have to know which island it is. You can see it. You can absolutely see it. And I don't know what in the world is holding it back. I mean, like a strong wind could...
That's right.
...could force that whole site. What about terrorists? What about somebody that wants our entire East Coast destroyed?
Well, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't even worry about terrorists too much since they have not really materialized except through the powers that be.
Oh, you're absolutely right.
But, of course, they might...
Crazy me.
You never know. Well, this mountain is shaped like a long tent, and it's called the Cumbre Vieja volcanic mountain on the island of La Palma in the Canary Island chain. Can you hear me okay?
Oh, I can hear you just fine.
Okay. Now, ever since 1949, as geologist Simon Day of the London College, I believe, goes on to explain in the video from the British Broadcasting Company, he says that ever since 1949, the western flank of this island, and that's off the west coast of Africa, so the western flank would be facing the east coast of the United States across the Atlantic Ocean. The western flank has somehow separated for some reason, separated from the island, the mountain proper. For the past 60 years, there has been about a 12-foot margin of space between that western flank, and it's just ready to drop off. There's nothing holding it on except friction. Now, this volcanic mountain, when they go on to explain in the presentation on the BBC, that when the volcano begins to become active and spews out hot steam, incidentally, the steam will be generated by all the water that's collected and trapped from rainfall in spaces inside the rock. This water would be heated up tremendously by lava, and then it would turn to steam, and the pressure of the steam would simply lift the island up slightly or severely, greatly reduce the friction between the side of the mountain and the mountain proper, between the loosened flank and the island proper. As a result, it would be sort of like putting a brick on the top of a sliding board and then putting some oil or grease underneath the brick and allow allowing the brick to slide down the sliding board. Now, the result would be this 500 billion ton western flank of the mountain. That's a half trillion tons. But the estimation from the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology in Zurich, Switzerland, is that it would punch through the water and displace far more water than its actual volume. And it would create a tsunami, the initial height of which would be, well, I should say, the initial rise in water after it plunges into the ocean would be about two Empire State Buildings tall.
Oh, my God.
And, of course, it would settle down, you know, the peak of water would settle down to a lower level and would then propagate across the Atlantic Ocean at the speed of about 450 miles an hour, which is probably faster, or just as fast as a jetliner, or faster. That's around three-quarters the speed of sound. And it would take about 8 hours to reach the east coast of the United States. It would take about 3 hours to reach Spain, Portugal, and the British Isles.
Oh, so it's just not going to destroy the United States. It's going to destroy parts of Europe also.
Yes, because it would be like taking a big rock and throwing it into a placid palm,
uh-huh.
a pond. And that rock would generate, you know, you can visualize the rock falling into the pond and generating a wave that ripples out concentrically in all directions.
Right.
So, yeah, it would travel to Europe and to North America, Nova Scotia, way up at the Canadian border, throughout the United States, Central America, South America. And when it reached the United States after about 8 hours, they estimate that the size of the tsunami wave would probably be about at least 60 stories high, which is about, I think the last tsunami that struck in Asia was an earthquake, undersea earthquake-driven tsunami, far less monumental than a landslide-driven tsunami. Because you had, in that case, in Asia, you had a shifting of the floor. The ocean floor broke apart, or there was a fault, and it separated, and it just dropped down, and or one side elevated, and it displaced an equal amount of the volume that had been elevated from the seafloor. And that created a wave, I believe, 30 to 50 feet high. Continuous wave, not a breaking wave, but a long, long, continuous 30 to 50 foot wave, which killed many, many thousands. Well, this would be more than 30 feet, would be like three stories, because you got about 10 feet for each story in a building. So here you'd have about 60 stories, 600 feet, so it would be about 20 times or more, or greater in height, the tsunami wave striking the East Coast. Then the one that was in Asia. New York City would be devastated if you were to see the movie The Day After Tomorrow.
Right.
The animation they did of that huge ocean wave swamping the streets of New York would be pretty accurate in reality.
Wow.
The thing is, we could do something about it, Ray Allen. And that's why I don't want to scare people. You know, I realize that people, many lives can be saved. I have a lot of friends who live in New York City, and also on the East Coast, the Jersey Coast, and all along the Atlantic Coast. And I had entertained hopes back in 2005 when I started really pushing on this campaign about the East Coast tsunami, trying to get people aware to the point where we would be prepared to move out well in advance, to move inland well in advance of the tsunami. And that can be done if people watch the volcanic activity on the Cumbre Vieja volcanic mountain in the Canary Islands and watch for any kind of volcanic activity occurring. That's always easily accessible, that information. And if they see it happening, don't wait until it's imminent. But take a day trip or a two-day trip and just drive westward. Stay in a motel for a couple days.
Can you imagine our government saying, look, folks, we're just going to have to evacuate the East Coast for a little bit because, you know, we may have a tsunami. How many looters are going to stay behind? Are the police going to stay behind to, you know, to protect property from the looters? And what if nothing happens?
Not the police, I know.
I know, but what if nothing happens, and then all of these business owners go back and find, well, everybody goes back and finds that the looters have absolutely destroyed everything they left. And so it's like,
yeah,
our government is between a rock and a hard place.
Well, if it were, in reality, you're talking about a drill?
No, I'm talking about the real thing. No, I'm talking about the real thing. If our government...
Oh, well, the real thing, it wouldn't matter. Anyway, the looters would get out of there. Everybody would be scrambling to get out of there. And regardless of what they looted, they would be very foolish because they would be inundated by the tsunami wave anyway. I mean, I think they would know that.
In other words, you don't think that our government, if they do announce it, that it could possibly not happen? If they're going to announce it, it's going to happen. Is that what you're saying?
No, what I'm saying is, like, the government, first of all, they would never announce it because they don't care about our lives. They actually want to see a reduction of population.
Yeah.
What they care about is money, property,
right,
and business. So they want to keep it secret, essentially.
They want the
threat to be suppressed so they can continue with the markets, making money and not disturbing the economy.
But now think about the way that they have absolutely looted the market. And today, you know, we know they've looted the market, and yet today I'm listening to some talking head who's prophesying that the market's going to go back to 10,000 any day now.
Oh, when you hear that, listen, you've got a great tip. That's a wonderful tip. That means it's going to go in just the opposite direction.
So everybody pull their money out of the market.
Exactly. Yeah. When you hear something like that, go the other way because you've gotten a very, very hot tip right there. They just do the opposite because they're trying to suck you in just like they've done in the past.
Oh, exactly. But think about all the looting that has happened to the money of the United States. It's almost as though these people know that this tsunami is about to happen and they're wanting to transfer their wealth out of the country as soon as possible.
Well, that's a good point. If you you can get an early indication of the threat of geological disasters just by watching the power elite. And I've been advocating this before, but my voice is really weak, you know, and doesn't reach very many people. But what I've been advocating is let us watch the power elite. And when they start ducking underground, when they start making moves, like they're making right now, to rape the economy and just flagrantly pillage without any qualms or any restraints at all, you know it's the end days. They're pulling out because they know disaster is coming and they don't have to answer to anybody. You can see the signs all around you. The sea fault in Norway, northern Norway, at the edge of the Arctic Circle, I believe.
I don't know anything
where they
about
can preserve
that.
Seeds underground. Why have they done that?
Yeah, exactly.
That's just one example.
Isn't that Bill Gates who did that one?
It might be. He was probably involved in it. But you know, there's power elite around the world, including the British Crown, the Dutch Crown, all the big members of the. Bilderberg. Actually, it's the Bilderberg. You know, if you watch Bilderberg, you could probably get a better indication of an advance warning of some kind of danger.
Mm-hmm.
Except for the tsunami generated, the landslide-driven tsunami generated at the Cumbre Vieja in the Canary Islands. That would be, but that information would be visible to everybody because you would just have to read the news, follow the news, but you have to follow that volcanic news every day.
Make sure that
it's not heating up. When it heats up, just get out of there.
What I really fear is that someone, a human, will trigger this. And I'm wondering if that's what, maybe there's somebody, you know, on the moon base or something, who has told Earthlings, this is what we're going to do to you if you do not give us this. And it's just, you know, when you think of it that way, you know, maybe the entire world is being held hostage to somebody that's got the ability to trigger that volcano.
I never thought of that. I never thought of it that way. I always thought of it as being, it's very possible that they could do it, but please don't. Now that you've given me the idea, I wonder how many other criminals have gotten the idea from you now.
I
hope not.
I hope not either, but I can't be the only person.
I've never thought of that before.
Yeah. As I said, I can't be the only person that thought of this. And that would explain some of the stupid, idiotic actions of all world leaders.
I think, from what I've been seeing, our world leaders know that there is disaster coming from the heavens. And the disaster coming from the heavens is what is provoking the volcanic activity all around the world, which will eventually, probably in the near future, provoke that dreaded volcanic eruption on the Cumbre Vieja and cause the landslide-driven tsunami that we're all worried about. It's what's happening in the heavens, the comets that are coming in, causing a gravitational pull, also exerting electromagnetic fields, generating electromagnetic fields as they travel. These are the things in the heavens that even the power elite are afraid of. So I don't think they're... maybe you're right. Maybe they're ready to try to provoke some of that. I know they've been doing a lot with the weather, so there may be a lot of truth in what you're saying, because, first of all, we know that the weather is being influenced by the bodies that are coming in through the from the heavens. But also, the power elite are generating earthquakes and creating weather, severe weather.
Right.
With harm.
You know, Richard Hoagland talked about this huge anomaly that hit Jupiter. And there have been two Earth-size anomalies, something hitting Jupiter, the size of the Earth. The first one happened on the 21st anniversary of the Apollo moon landing. The second one happened on the 40th anniversary of the Apollo.
Well, and that goes way beyond coincidence.
Precisely. But what I just read somewhere, and I don't know who it was, it sounds like it could have been Richard Hoagland again, but there have been these somethings. Something hit Jupiter, hit Mars, hit Venus, and whoever it was that was saying this, I'm not going to say it was Richard, but I think it was, something's going to hit the Earth. Now, what are these things that are hitting?
Well,
what do you
you're
think?
Right. Something will hit the Earth, I'm afraid to say. But again, before I go on to talk about that, we should know that to get beyond fear, to know that God, there is a God who created us and loves us, and he shows evidence of his love for us every single second by keeping our heart beating. Every second, even while we're asleep, he thinks about us when we don't think about him.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking out my backyard at the beautiful flowers today, and way beyond deep across my back lawn, I have these huge trees, just walls of green trees with lots of so much foliage that it looks like a green wall.
And John,
I think of it as my cathedral.
Yeah, John, hold your thought right there. We'll come right back to your cathedral after this quick break. You're listening to Radio RNN, and we are talking with John DiNardo, who's been on the cutting edge of the worldwide conspiracy for years. We'll be right back. You are listening to Radio RNN. This is Raylan, and we're talking with John DiNardo, and he was talking about his cathedral in the woods. And you were using that as an example to let all of us know that we do have a Father, and that Father is watching out over us every moment of our lives. I think the point that John was making, the point being that we have to get over our fear. If we don't get over our fear, we are just literally slaves to raw animal emotion. And you've seen, I don't know how many of you have actually seen a herd of horses or a herd of cattle that have been panicked. You've seen it on television, but I don't know if you've ever seen it in real life. I mean, when that herd starts panicking, you don't know which way they're going to turn. I mean, you may be standing 500 feet away in the opposite direction, and yet suddenly they're headed straight for you, and there's nothing you can do except try to outrun them, and you don't even know which way that they're going to try to outrun them. And that's that kind of raw human emotion is what John was talking about, that we've got to get beyond it. And, you know, folks, the only thing that I can think of is, you know, to get beyond this kind of raw emotion, you've got to come to some sort of, what do I want to say, balance within yourself. And, you know, many people, not just me, many people rely on a force higher than themselves to help them come into that balance. Many people are atheists. They don't believe in God, but they use the power of themselves to come into that kind of balance to a point where you know when you have to flee, but you don't flee in panic. You flee with a plan ahead of you. And that was what John was trying to impart, at least I hope it is. I'm wondering if John is back yet.
Yes, I am. I'm sorry. I didn't realize the break was so short. You're right.
Did I sum up what it was that you were about to talk to us about when you talked about your cathedral in the woods?
Yes. I mean, the love of God. I'm just enthralled by God's love that he displays. I was looking at the bushes with these beautiful purple and violet and white Rose of Sharon blooming right now, embedded in this huge wall of a green. It seems to tower right up to the sky. That's how this wall, how high this and continuous this wall of green leafy trees is. And it's just, I just thank God for, because I see him showing his love for us and trying in so many ways to show us that he exists, even though he cannot show his face to us, and there are reasons for that, which I won't explain. But he cannot show himself physically right now, but his spirit is there, and that's why he gives us so many wonderful things, so that we'll have such an abundance of evidence that he exists, that we will turn to him and believe, and communicate with him in our minds. So, and we'll find out who he is. We'll find out whether he's Jesus, which I have found out that he is, or it doesn't even matter if you just call out and say, "Dear God, I don't know if you exist at all, but I'm willing to try. I wanted to talk to you because I'm not embarrassed in my own room to speak to you and say I have only as much faith as a mustard seed, as small as a mustard seed. But I'm willing to give you that amount of faith and wait for some kind of sign from you.
But
either,
you know, John,
something in my path. You'll bring someone in my life, and it's happened to me. Right?
The thing that I love is even people who don't believe in God, if they will just give that challenge, you know, in the quiet of their room, they can think it, they can talk it, but they say, "Hey, God, I don't believe in you. I really don't believe in you.
That's exactly
show me
it.
That you really exist." And you know,
you're
if
right.
you do that a number of times, I have heard this from devout atheists who have taken the challenge from someone like you or like me, who truly believe that there is no God, we're all an accident of nature, and Darwin was right. But if they say, "Hey, God, show me you exist. I don't believe in you. Show me you exist." And if they just keep challenging him and challenging him and challenging him, he's going to show them he exists. And
that's so true.
And
he will grow that faith like a mustard seed, which is tiny. It's like this. It's almost as small as a grain of pepper. But when it grows, it forms a huge bush that sprawls out in all directions, and the birds of the air nest in it and provides cover. Protection for animals and birds, and that's how faith grows when one talks with God.
But you know, John, one of the things that everybody knows, there's a saying that there are no atheists in foxholes. One other thing is there are no atheists for people who have died and who have come back. How many people do you know who have had a near-death experience? I have. I was out of body God knows how long, going through the universe. Once you have done that, there's no fear of death because you know that the body that we're wearing is just like an overcoat. And, you know, when the overcoat wears out, you throw it in the garbage and get a new overcoat.
Yes, in the Bible, it's the Apostle Paul actually had a death experience, too. He, just as you, he had an out-of-body experience. He was beaten and left for dead by a mob. And he said that he went to the third heaven. The first heaven, of course, is the skies where the birds fly. And the second heaven is outer space. The third heaven is another dimension that exists, but we don't see it because it's in another dimension. And that's where God reigns.
Yeah.
So he went to the third heaven and he saw things. He said, no, I don't know how to interpret what he said. He said that they're unspeakable. What does that mean? That means he was not allowed to speak them, or things that were so amazing that he could not even describe them.
He couldn't describe them.
But he was just as you. He went to the third heaven and he came back to life again. So there's another example. And there are many other people who've done
this. And you know, with God, when Jesus talked about the many mansions in his Father's kingdom, I am certain he was talking about a multi-dimensional universe.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
you
that
can
makes
hear,
sense.
You can hear the music. We're going to have to come back, and let's stay with that multi-dimensional universe. You're listening to Rumor Mill News Radio. We're talking with John Gennardo. We're talking about Planet X and the apocalypse and all of these things, but we're also talking about God and why you shouldn't have fear here on the Micro Effect Radio Broadcast Network. You are listening to Radio RMN. This is Raylan, and I'm talking with John Gennardo, and we're talking about, you know, minor everyday things like tsunamis and gigantic tidal waves taking out the entire East Coast and 2012 prophecies. But, you know, if you've got a foundation that is solid, you know, like the house that's built on granite instead of on the sand, if you've got a belief in God like John has and like I have, you're not going to panic. You're not going to run the wrong way. And while we were on the break, somebody sent me a picture of President Obama, and it actually comes from WorldNet Daily, and I think it's an April 25th, 2009 photograph of Barack Obama as if he is Jesus on the cross. He's in front of the presidential seal with a crown of thorns on his head. And essentially he is saying, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me. And it's interesting. I don't know why the person sent it to me at this particular time. But, you know, John, we are in a time of fake messiahs. Benjamin Krem was on the air with his Maitreya. And many, many people look at Barack Obama as being, you know, the second coming of Jesus. And I have even heard that he is actually born of the bloodline of King Solomon.
Wow, and I've heard that too, that he has some kind of
royal blood
of the power elite in him. And of course, you know, we see when we study the power elite that they do make sure that someone is in their bloodline when that person ascends to power, before that person ascends to power.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. You know, what I am sensing more and more, and, you know, we're getting off the subject of you know, 2012 and the volcano and the tsunami, and yet it's in the same vein, because what I am sensing is such an upheaval here in the United States that could easily be brought on by the assassination of our first black president. Can you imagine? I mean,
yeah,
either
talk about that, because then they start blaming us for even considering it. You know?
Well,
you're right. I mean, this is a free country, and you certainly have the right to do it, to talk about that. It's certainly a possibility, and the ones who would do it would be the people in power.
The people in power, absolutely. I hope Barack Obama understands this. I hope his wife understands this. I hope his mother-in-law and children understand this, that he is a target for the elite. And when the elite think that their plans may not you know, go the way they want them to go.
Mm-hmm.
All they have to do is send out, you know, a mind-controlled Manchurian candidate who will self-destruct right on the scene like Lee Harvey Oswald did, you know, either shoot himself or be killed by a, you know, a grateful passerby or something.
You have the knowledge of the actuality of the Manchurian candidate program.
Yes.
And you're absolutely correct. There have been so many of them that wind up toys that have been sent out, and they invariably kill themselves so that there can be no evidence brought back on the real criminals.
That's exactly right. And if anybody wants to read a report on this, my husband Gunter literally wrote a SITREP, means situation report, on Manchurian candidates. He called it Operation Open Eyes because that is the name, the official name in the CIA, at least at the time that he was writing about it. And when you reach a level five is a fully programmed Manchurian candidate just waiting for the trigger to send him out. In other words, this could be your neighbor, John. Your neighbor could be sitting there, you know, mowing the lawn, you know, trimming the trees, keeping everything absolutely beautiful. And then one day, he receives a telephone call. And whatever the trigger is in that telephone call, he looks at his wife. He may even shoot his wife as he walks out the door.
Exactly.
And he walks out the door, possibly shooting everybody in his path before he gets to whatever his target is. And
it could happen to anybody. Exactly. I mean, the movie that the scenario that you just described was clearly portrayed in the movie The Manchurian Candidate with Frank Sinatra and Lawrence Harvey way back in 1962.
Wasn't that an incredible movie?
Just what you said was what happened. He would receive a telephone call, and he was told to start turning cards over until he saw the Queen of Diamonds.
That's right.
When he saw the Queen of Diamonds, whatever was being told to him at that time, he would do.
That's right.
And in one case, he was turning cards over at a bar, and somebody said, "Oh, go jump in the lake."
And he went and he jumped in the lake. Yeah.
And he walked out there and jumped in the lake.
And if Frank Sinatra had not been following him, watching everything that he did, the guy would have drowned. He would have died.
Right. So this is what they do, and they've been sending. We can't even count all the Manchurian candidates that have been sent out.
Think how long ago Frank Sinatra made that movie. I think it was released 40. The year before JFK was killed. And
it was 62, exactly. Yeah. It was 47 years ago.
And it was
And you know what?
What?
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, it was only in the theater a very short period of time because Kennedy was killed, and they didn't want anybody to associate Manchurian candidate with the assassination of our president.
That's right. You're exactly right. And you know what? When videotapes were the only media that Blockbuster Video, I got a Blockbuster Video of the Manchurian candidate, that early version, not the latest one.
Mm-hmm.
And on the back of it said just precisely what you said. And I saw it, that statement by Blockbuster, to be so important that I photocopied the back of the Blockbuster videotape box, the container. And on it, it said, just like you said, that this movie was kept from the public for 20 years because of the Kennedy assassinations, plural.
Kennedy assassinations. Right. Both of them.
So, and I've got that. I've got the photocopy of that. So this is Blockbuster making this statement. Which,
now we have to ask ourselves, you know, there's more. Manchurian candidates do more than just shoot people. Manchurian candidates can be driving a car and aim their car at someone. Manchurian candidates can be flying an airplane.
That happened with the car incident happened when there was some royalty. Where was it, in Canada? A few months back, remember?
No, I don't remember. What was that?
There was a guy who drove his car into the crowd when there was some royalty.
Oh, that was the Queen of the Netherlands, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's what it was.
Well, maybe it was.
And the Queen of the Netherlands is one of the big honchos, one of the big leaders.
Right.
Of the Bilderberg, the New World Order.
But the thing of it is, whenever you see a car crash that takes out someone famous, like, you know, like the inventor of the Cray computer, who I know was murdered in this car crash. And interestingly enough, the histories, the stories surrounding his death are fake. One of my friends, you know, in intelligence, says that he was actually alive, and they had to send somebody in to kill him to make it look like he was killed in the accident. But he was alive and trying to get away.
It was an auto accident.
Yeah, it was.
It was an auto accident?
Yes, it was an auto accident.
Do you remember the name of this person, the inventor?
Well, it's Cray, but I can't remember his first name.
Okay.
Cray, the inventor of the Cray computer.
There was another guy I read about a number of years ago, and I kept the article. I have it somewhere from the Newark Star-Ledger. It was about a man named Stryk, S-T-R-Y-K.
Uh-huh.
And he was a genius. He was killed in an auto accident, and said he had this brilliant idea as to how the people could regain power over the government and become independent. And he was striving to put this plan into operation, and he died in an auto accident.
Uh-huh.
So obviously they killed him.
Yes, yes. Now, of course, it doesn't necessarily need to be a Manchurian candidate. It could just be a plain assassin that drives you off the road and then leaps out of the car, goes down to see if you're dead or alive, and as he reaches in to help you out, he snaps your neck. So he makes sure you're dead.
That's right. You mean like with Bill Clinton, the Clinton body count, was one of the bodyguards of Clinton was run off the road and killed, I believe, or they attempted to kill him. And then Shelley Kelly, the stewardess on the aircraft that took Ron Brown, Secretary of Commerce, Ron Brown, to Croatia, Croatia, right, and the plane was crashed. They used a landing beacon,
right,
which the beacon actually brought them and guided them right into the side of a mountain,
mm-hmm.
the aircraft. And Shelley Kelly was still alive. She was able to walk, and they injected some deadly poison into her arm and made sure she was dead by the time she got to the hospital.
Exactly. And I don't know if you remember the three Air Force doctors who performed the autopsy on Ron Brown from that one. They found a bullet hole right in the top of his head.
And you know what? The bullet was made of ice. It was an ice bullet, frozen water.
I did not know that. That I have.
That's what I had read a study, a report on that.
But we never heard.
I mean, ice is nice because there's no evidence remaining.
And we never heard word one about these Air Force doctors after that. Are they dead or alive? They probably were sent to Iraq and blown up in, you know, IEDs.
I mean, that's what they want to get rid of anybody, even if that person seems perfectly loyal.
Right.
And quiet, silent. They'll still kill him because they don't want to take chances. Look at Bill Clinton's bodyguards that were sent into Waco.
God,
remember Bill Clinton? Three of them were killed at Waco. They're probably shot in the back.
You know, I would hate to be Secret Service for any president. I really would. I mean, I can't imagine these guys who want to be Secret Service. First of all, you can't even trust your partner. You don't know who your partner's working for. Is he working for our government? Is he working for the good guys in our government, for the bad guys?
Well, I'd rather have my partner working for the enemy.
Exactly.
Because our government is the most deadly people to be working for, even especially when you're under their employ.
You know, it still amazes me that so many people go into government service. And, you know, let's take a look at this healthcare plan. All of these government service people, that means all the bureaucrats that are working in all of those government buildings in Washington, did you know that they've got the same kind of health insurance that the president and the, well, maybe not the president, he's got a little better than anybody, but that Congress has? So we've got these entrenched bureaucrats, and who's encouraged to go into government service? It's the Ivy League graduates, you know,
yes.
Columbia.
Skull and bones.
Skull and Bones. These are the people that are encouraged to go into government service. And what kind of philosophy do they have in their minds?
Probably
something from Saul Alinsky, which comes out atheist communist.
Well, actually, it goes even beyond that, because these people are elitist. They think they're superior, and they are very happy to be in a superior echelon where they can look down on and, destroy and harm the general people, the public, because they are elitist. They are blue bloods. That's what Skull and Bones, the Bush family, are all about, people like that.
I think about Hitler's brown shirts and all of those brown shirts as they were going out killing people and imprisoning them and bringing their man to power. And then look what happened to them. They were killed. They were imprisoned.
Yes. Well, they always get wasted, right? They eat their own. It's a common term. And also in China, it was a group of brown shirts, basically. I just don't remember the term. It'll come to me in a minute. People that were sent out to beat up, it's always the same pattern. Beat up anybody who dissented from the authoritarian communist plan of, being a total slave to the government under their dictatorial regime. If anyone dissented, they would be beat up by mobs of goons, young people, the Red Guard.
The Red Guard, that's exactly right.
Right, during the Cultural Revolution, Mao Zedong's Cultural Revolution, you had the same thing with Nazis. So it's always the same pattern. And guess who instituted the Red Guard and communism in China? It was the power elite.
It
sounds ironic, but it really makes a lot of sense that the power elite constructed communism so that they could actually establish a slave state over the entire world. China was one of the first test cases of their slave state, which was a global slave state. Russia was also a test case, and now they're ready to implement it worldwide.
Well, you know what is very amazing is I truly believe that Vladimir Putin woke up, saw the handwriting on the wall, kicked the oligarchs out of Russia. And, of course, here we call them the elite. The elite mainstream media refers to it to the elite in Russia as oligarchs. So we don't know that they're the same stupid bankers that live in the city of London, burrows and caves where little reptiles live. And so I really do believe that Putin is awake. He knows who's running the planet.
Oh, yeah.
And
he's
keeping them out of Russia. What do you feel about China, though? I'm beginning to see that China is waking up, just like Putin woke up.
Well, the Bible tells us that the kings of the East will come back and conflict with the New World Order, the power elite. And this is what we see in the book of Revelation, the kings of the East coming across to battle with the power elite.
Now, the kings of the East, they consider themselves dragons. And I'm wondering how the dragon symbology fits into biblical revelations. What do you think about that?
The symbology of the dragon is Satan. Satan is actually symbolized as the dragon in the book of Revelation. The kings of the East, I don't know, you're right. The dragon, it's a funny thing. It gets kind of, there are many ramifications of that symbology. Because the dragon in China, and this gets us back to Planet X, which I think a lot of people want us to talk about. But the dragon was seen in the sky, and the dragon is a representation in the minds of the people, the generations, ancient generations in China who witnessed the coming of this comet in the sky, which was probably the comet which became Venus, the planet Venus. This comet, incidentally, I think there's strong evidence, and we can talk about it, but there's strong evidence that this comet was brought in gravitationally in the gravitational field of planet X.
In other words,
one of thousands of comets that were dragged in, sort of like a wrecking ball. or a shotgun blast is more graphic analogy. But Venus came in and did tremendous devastation to Earth without even touching it because of the gravitational forces exerted between the planet Venus and Earth.
So
the dragon is I should get back to what I was saying. The dragon was the electrical discharging of the tail itself that made the...
What epoch are we talking about, though?
Well, this is during the time of the Exodus, roughly around 1500 B.C.
Okay.
And that's all described in the Bible in the book of Exodus. All the events, these earth disasters, is specified in the Bible, clearly describe the characteristic, the scientific the details of how Earth would be ravaged by another celestial body exerting a gravitational pull between it, the celestial body, and planet Earth. Everybody knows is aware of the force of gravity, which causes all objects to fall to the ground toward the center of the Earth. Well, that same force is multiplied many times when you have not the Earth and your body, or the Earth and a falling apple, attracting one another, but you have the Earth and another planet, which is perhaps the size of the Earth, or maybe one-fourth the size of the Earth. Now the gravitational force of attraction between Earth and this other passing comet becomes extraordinarily great, and it's the greatest factor, the most influential factor in the amount of the force between these two bodies is the distance between them. In fact, the distance is so important that if you were to go move this one body one half the distance closer than the original distance, suppose it was like a million miles apart, and you moved it a half a million miles closer, then the force of attraction between the two bodies would increase by a factor of four, would be four times greater. So it would be squared, one half.
Now, let's get back to the dragon's tail, which...
Well, the dragon, what happens is when a comet comes in, and comets are actually celestial bodies, hard rock, they're not made of ice. It's been proven already, but science, NASA, they won't change their view because I guess there's too much invested in pride. But anyway, when a comet comes in from deep space, it has to puncture the heliosphere, which is... you can visualize that as a huge bubblegum bubble encircling the entire solar system. That includes all the way out to Pluto and well beyond Pluto. There's this huge bubblegum bubble, and visualize it glowing sort of red. It doesn't have to be red, but visualize it that way as a glowing red bubblegum bubble consisting of electrical charge, plasma, that has been spewed out in all directions like a rippling wave rippling out concentrically from a stone that's dropped in a pond. The only difference is the stone dropped in a pond causing ripples to generate, propagate outwards, is only two-dimensional on the surface of the water, whereas what you have emanating from the sun, this plasma is three-dimensional in all directions, and that creates a huge sphere of plasma around the solar system. Okay, now, when passing bodies come in, they are drawn in by the sun and by Jupiter's tremendous magnetic field. These passing bodies, in this case, we're talking about Planet X, which is a periodic passing body because it's a comet. It's on a cometary orbit. It goes around a distant sun in our solar system, a dead sun about 50 billion miles out. And it has been detected, this dead sun. It travels around that sort of like a bicycle chain would travel around the rear sprocket wheel of a bicycle. And then it whips around, and due to the gravitational force, the centrifugal force and centripetal forces acting on this celestial body, Planet X, causes it to whip around the distant sun, and it comes back again. And it travels very slowly as it is like a slingshot, more or less, through deep space until it gets to our solar system, and then it goes around our sun, sort of like the bicycle chain would go around the pedal sprocket wheel of a bicycle. So you have a bicycle chain going around two sprocket wheels, the big one and the little one. The big one, let's say the big one, the pedal sprocket wheel, is our sun, and the rear sprocket wheel is the distant sun. The distance between those two sprocket wheels is about 50 billion miles, and it takes about 3,600 years for this planet to make one complete loop around both the suns. Right now it seems to be due back into our solar system on its cyclical journey. And, well, when it punches through our heliosphere and surrounding, as it's a plasma sphere surrounding our solar system, it picks up a lot of plasma. It becomes drenched in plasma, sort of like a bee. Visualize the planet X as a bee flying from outside the bubblegum bubble into the bubblegum bubble. Okay, now the bee flies in and he picks up a whole stream of bubblegum as a tail. He's got this long tail of bubblegum that's stretched like an elastic band as he flies into the solar system at some point.
And hold your thoughts there. We're talking about this long tail that gathers up stuff as it passes through our solar system. We're talking with John DiNardo, and we're going to be right back here on Radio RMN on the Micro Effect Radio Broadcast Network. We'll be back.